You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, SFU's community radio station broadcasting live from Burnaby, BC.
I was having a drink with a friend of mine. Smart guy. Very successful guy. And a connected guy. Not to the mob. Politically connected. Invariably, our conversation turned to politics. And I asked him, what does he make of where we're at right now? You know, things seem to have calmed down. Maybe we've got the right guy in charge. What's his take? And he leaned in a bit closer to me and he said, look, you and me, we've got, if we're lucky, 30 more years, 40 more years. I said, yeah. He said, there's no doubt in my mind we will die Americans. Our kids will be Americans. And I looked at him funny, and sensing my skepticism, he began to explain point for point exactly how it's going to happen. Some Canadian companies already moving their factories to the States. Much more of a problem, he said, is the Canadian money is moving to the States. Rich people, they can do math. And as Trump cuts taxes and cuts capital gains, they are making a very simple business decision to put their money, their investments, and themselves where they'll get to keep more of what they have and what they're going to have. And he explained to me that this isn't going to stop. You know, America's just going to keep chipping away at us. Even after Trump, they're going to keep isolating us. They're going to lean on other countries to punish us. They're going to weaken us until there's just less money for the government to tax. And it doesn't take a genius to see what that's going to do to our public services. They're going to suffer, or they're going to continue to suffer. They're going to degrade the things that make us Canadian. Decent public schools, our infrastructure, our transit, affordable yet really good universities, public health care. They're going to crater or get privatized or both. And eventually, all of this stuff just gets worse until we look around at this place and we ask ourselves, like, what are we even hanging on to here? It's already happening, he explained. The Canadian elite, our business class, our ruling class, our political leaders, they already spend half their time in America. For God's sakes, the last president of the CBC was running the place from her home in Brooklyn. And as for the rest of us, I mean, how would we even know? Where would we even talk about it? I mean, we barely even pay attention to our own media. And even when we do watch Canadian news, half of it is about Trump and whatever distraction or sensational, grotesque thing he's trying to distract the world with. We take the bait every time. I mean, look at CBC's Daily News podcast. It's not terribly concerned with Canada. I mean, check it out. These are just episode titles from the last few weeks alone. Jimmy Kimmel, free speech, and big money media. What exactly is Antifa? Can Trump's peace plan help end the war in Gaza? Trump and the alarm bells of fascism. U.S. politics, government shutdown. Autism and Tylenol. Will Trump declare war on Chicago? I counted their last 12 episodes, and one of them was about Canada. All of that is consistent with what my friend was telling me. We'll just sort of ease into it. We'll become Americans without a war. No shots will be fired. It'll happen without a debate, without so much as a national discussion. And that's where he lost me. That last one. That much I knew he was just wrong about. Look, our traditional institutions might be weak. They might be weaker than ever right now. The CBC, yes, but CTV News, the Globe and Mail, they may have lost interest in speaking to Canadians about Canada. But Canada's aging institutions are not Canada's people. And what we saw last spring from Canadian people was nothing short of extraordinary. Albertan conservatives and Quebec separatists and Indigenous land backers and downtown Toronto latte sippers, we all got together around one shared certainty. We are not Americans. We don't want to be. And we never will be. And listen, if that certainty, that rare shared moment, if that is going to hold, if that insistence is going to stand strong as our actual reality, we are going to need to talk to each other across party lines, across ideological divisions, across this country, not one day out of 12. No, we are going to need to stay dialed in with our elbows up, okay? We're going to need to shake off the distractions, and there are going to be endless distractions, dramatic, grotesque carnival of distractions coming from America. We are going to need to ignore them and to talk about Canada like we actually give a d- about it. As if it means something, as if it matters. This moment that we're in, this historical moment that we're in, this do-or-die challenge that we find ourselves in, this is what we built Canada Land for. Without even knowing it, 12 years ago, I just started a podcast so that I could say things that I could not say elsewhere, so that I could talk about the Canadian media, the industry that I work in, as if it matters. And that grew. It grew with incredible colleagues who talk about all sorts of different things here as if they matter. But those colleagues were only possible because listeners of this show decided that it should grow. We cover Canada and nothing but Canada. If you find us doing an episode about Botswana, that's because there's some way that Botswana is relevant to Canada. And yes, we opine, we mock, we criticize, we question, we cast doubt. But always, we take what happens in this country seriously. We try not to take ourselves too seriously, but we cover what happens in this country as if it matters, because it does. There is something bigger happening, something special happening across this country. We were early to it, but it's not just us. We are part of a new generation of independent news and media companies. Each of these different organizations could and should make the same case that I'm making right now, that we need independent media in Canada now more than ever. We need institutions that are not on their last breath, that are just coming into life, and we desperately need places, more than one place, more than just Canada Land, where facts matter, where reporting matters, where reason and debate stands, and that are not just built for one kind of person or one kind of idea. There's a bunch of us out there. Look, the last thing that I asked this friend of mine after he explained to me the process by which we inevitably all become American, I asked him if he had a plan. And he said, yeah, he's already figured out a plan B. And he has bought property in another country entirely because he doesn't want to be a American either. Look, I don't have a plan B. I don't necessarily have a plan A either. I'm not here telling you that Canada Land is going to be the superhero that saves Canadian sovereignty. I don't think that that's something that journalists should be promising you. Our job is to tell you the story of what happens, whatever happens. But as you know, I don't believe in phony objectivity. I do have a point of view. I do have a take. And my take is, I do not want to be an American either. So what is that? What is this fight ahead? This much we can say. It's a fight for independence. And that is something that we have always stood for. That's what we built Canada Land to be. Independent media, independent of political persuasion, independent of government funding, independent of ideology. We try to have ideas here, not ideology. Those are the principles that have been important to us from the start, before there was even a glimmer of a concept of this national battle for independence that we now find ourselves in. But as a result of those principles, we have created and held a very special place, a place where the leader of the federal NDP comes in to be questioned and where Conservative MP Michelle Rempel comes in to be questioned, because we are fair. And because we have an audience that is worth reaching, that has not chosen a tribe to belong to no matter what. We have built a common space where debate and facts still matter. And now we're all going to need it. Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it.
I'm Noor Azriyeh. Today we're talking about the news. We'll talk about child soldiers and sports sponsorships. We'll talk about why municipal governments just got a whole lot easier to cover. But mostly we'll talk about how many Canadians are choosing to get their news these days. Hint, it ends with Fluencer.
Well, a new report says it wasn't news outlets or politicians who dominated the online conversation during the spring federal election campaign. It was influencers.
Wait for that. The man, the myth, the legend, the producer of Canada Land Politics, the host of Off the Record, our supporter show, Sam Connert. Welcome back to the show.
Happy to be here, Noor.
I'm about to get blacklisted by all the mainstream media companies.
You guys want to hear a fun little fact?
I heard the craziest story today.
What if I told you
this is the most corrupt thing a Canadian politician has ever done?
Did you guys know far-right extremists in Canada are bragging that they have guys on the inside of the Conservative Party of Canada?
The Liberal government has broken my heart and let me down.
Sam, where do newsfluencers fit in your media diet? Do they fit at all?
No, I don't think they do fit at all. The only time I see them is on Twitter, basically. I don't really follow anyone on Instagram or TikTok that gives me my news. And they usually just have the result of making me mad.
So you don't watch newsfluencers?
No, but I'm very familiar with the content.
You said it makes you mad. Is that why you don't watch it? Or is there like a larger philosophical reason why you don't watch newsfluencers? It can be, it just makes you mad. That's totally a fair answer too.
I think there's two. One, from a philosophical level, not that I'm a very philosophical guy, but I think a lot of it is pretty damaging. I think I've seen many times where they get things wrong. So that in turn makes me mad. But the other thing that makes me mad is maybe if I hadn't been too shy to do this or to dance on TikTok 5 years ago, I could be making a lot of money being a newsfluencer or an influencer of some kind. So maybe there's a hint of jealousy in that
maybe
we work very hard at our job and we don't always get the views of these people. So maybe there's a bit of jealousy there.
I watch newsfluencers, not for the daily dose of here's what's happening in the news. I do that every day for my job. I go on CBC, I go on The Globe, Toronto Star, The Verge, all the different news outlets that I like to consume. I listen to podcasts. I don't consume newsfluencer content as news, but I see it more as me doing like an anthropological study of how this medium talks about news and who talks about news and how they talk about it. When it comes to Canada, though, there's not a lot of newsfluencers or Canadian politics influencers. The names that generally come to mind for me are Rachel Gilmore.
It's rare that we get an actual photo of the moment that around becomes finding out.
Isaac Peltz.
I'm a journalist living out of Montreal, and I'm doing the largest investigation into the housing crisis ever done. And I have bad news. We're doomed.
Frank Dominic.
Doug Ford gave away almost $1 billion of your tax dollars for seemingly no reason.
Cole Bennett.
I'm not even sure that some Americans are aware they are the laughingstock of the world.
Robin Skies.
One of the most beautiful things that has come out of the passing of Charlie Kirk is the massive resurgence of Christianity throughout the West, specifically Canada, the United States, and Europe.
Mario Zelaya.
Honestly, in 100 years, I think we're going to become the third world country. Like, I literally think Canada and North America, we are going to become the third world country.
And Jennifer Lewettes.
A couple months ago, I was threatened legally by the Métis Nation Saskatchewan.
And all these people, I would put in that newsfluencer, Canadian politics influencer category. But some of them are not just that. Rachel Gilmore is also a journalist. Isaac Peltz does investigative reporting for The Rover. Jennifer Lewettes does APTN panels. So they all kind of operate in this space, but the line between journalism and influencer gets a little blurry. What to you is the distinction between these people? Do you see a distinction?
I think there's an inherent difference in authentic motivations versus commercial motivations. So I think that when somebody is actively pursuing brand deals, when somebody is actively pursuing views for money, and the more views you get, the more money you make, the more brand deals you can get, that is something that I don't do.
But Canadaland does. We have advertisers. We have brand sponsors. The more people that listen to our podcast and watch our clips, the better it is for us commercially. The more people support us financially, they become a supporter, the better that we can do as a company. Because, like, we are a commercial entity at Canadaland, too.
Yeah, every news organization is a commercial entity, but I get paid regardless. So if you're asking me specifically about what motivates me is good storytelling, holding power to account, and I get paid either way. So it's awesome if the company continues to do well, but for me, my motivation is to act as a journalist. And the distinction between the two is that Canadaland has ad people, we have marketing people, we have growth strategist people, and none of that is my job. And when you condense all of that into a single person, it can start to get troublesome and biased, and it's an impossible job for one person to do. I'm not slighting these newsfluencers by any means. They need to make a living, but that's just the distinction I see between myself and them.
The reason I want to talk about this, the kind of murkiness of what newsfluencers are, about this genre of media, is because of a story I came across recently. Here's the headline. Influencers, not news outlets or politicians, dominated election online. It's a Canadian press piece from October of this year based on research by the Canadian Digital Media Research Network from McGill and the University of Toronto. And what they found was pretty unsurprising to anyone who has a phone, who scrolls on social media, or to anyone who lived through this election.
Researchers looked at more than a million posts across X, Instagram, TikTok, Blue Sky, YouTube, and Telegram, and found influencers were most active in terms of frequency and volume of online posts and got the most engagements.
Is that surprising to you?
No, it's not surprising to me, but I think I just need to highlight that engagement does not equal influence. The study that they are referencing provides no link between the popularity of an influencer and public changing of opinions and attitudes and voting behavior. So big grain of salt in this study that engagement is not the same as influence.
So what you're saying is even if a million people watched a video, a million people could have just had none of their opinions change. It didn't radically get them to get up and vote. Like, that's what you're saying, right?
That's a bit of an extreme version of what I'm saying, I think. But obviously, if someone gets a million views, some people are going to listen. But for CP to reference this study and not make the distinction between engagement and influence, I think is a bit problematic. And it makes influencers seem a lot more important in the Canadian media ecosystem than they actually are.
Maybe I disagree. If I got 15 views on my podcast and a random TikToker got a million views, they're going to have an outsized influence than I will because the scale of their project is much bigger. Don't you think that's fair?
Yeah, I think that's fair. But also, you're giving an extreme example, but if say 1,000 people read a CBC piece, they trust that piece, they trust the journalist that wrote it, that is going to influence them a lot more than, say, someone they scroll across on their TikTok feed, even if they have a million views. I'd like to think, I have faith in the Canadian news consumer that they treat one as more reliable than the other.
Sorry to burst your bubble. It's not about whether they want facts or policy. They want influencers. They do not necessarily want CBC news articles. And it's not because they're turning to influencers out of ignorance. They're turning to them because they're looking for voices that feel authentic and speak to their lived experience. That's not me saying it. That's the Canada Research Chair in Digital Communication saying that Canadians who prefer influencer content feel like traditional media is disconnected from their personal lives, that it's too polished. She says Canadians turn to influencers because, quote, influencers come across as more authentic, more on the ground, and more trustworthy because they're often speaking to you in a conversational way.
But the thing is, what is an influencer? Does the study go into breaking down what an influencer is? There's individual influencers, there's opinion people, there's branded accounts, there's things like Narcity or, what is it, blog.to? Are those influencers?
In the study that we are referencing, they're defined as individuals with at least 10,000 followers whose content was two-thirds politics, mostly Canadian politics, and who do not use their online presence purely in a professional capacity, as in not journalists. I feel like you're having a hard time reconciling that thought, that more people are using social media as a means to get their politics news from.
Yeah, I guess I am having trouble reconciling this. I just think it's such a catch-all to say someone that reposts political memes and talks about political memes. It just feels like it's so overarching of a study that it can't grasp the actual influence of these people. It's not a measurable concept, the influence that they have. Like, nowhere in the study does it say it swayed election results.
Yeah, no, and I don't necessarily think that's the point of the report. When I think back to even just the election, and I think about the fact that we as a company, as a news organization, much like many other news organizations in the country, couldn't post to Instagram and Facebook. And what we got as a consequence of us not being able to do that because of Bill C-18, because we can't post to Meta sites, is that things like influencers filled that void. Influencers accounted for almost half, 47% of political content in the data from the research network. News outlets were at 28%, and politicians themselves were at 18%. And that's something that the report noted, that the rise of popularity of these newsfluencers was consistent with the news sharing ban on Meta and reduced visibility of news on X, which elevated non-news voices and infotainment publishers. Like, the screenshots of news stories have become one of the biggest ways Canadians consume political information now, which horrifies me. Like, screenshots of a news article gets more traction than the actual news article. And this isn't just this study that's saying this. The Nieman Lab says that national news outlets lost 84% of their engagement. Local news outlets lost 85% of their engagement. Almost half of local outlets stopped posting entirely for the four-month period after the news ban. And the Hub found similar results as well. So even if we can't tangibly say they have more real-life influence, they can't change minds, and they can't encourage people to get up and vote for elections, the fact is people see that stuff, the newsfluencers, way more than they would see actual news. And again, back to the point that we raised earlier, and even if we had a platform to compete with these people, if the news ban went out the window, if news companies stepped up their game, that even then, Canadians just like newsfluencers way more. They find them more authentic. I watch the CBC's TikToks. I watch the Globe and Mail has some TikToks as well. They just don't land in the same way with people that videos of, I don't know, Frank Dominic and Robin Skies and Mario Zelaya.
One thing I'd be curious to see is what the political divide was between these people, because obviously right-wing newsfluencers and right-wing media types are going to get a lot more traction because there's an inherent distrust of mainstream media. And people on Rumble or people on, I guess, even Twitter now that are getting huge engagement. And I have a gut feeling that this is mostly coming from one side.
So the study includes accounts from across the political spectrum. But Sam, your gut feeling is correct. The biggest accounts are right-wing figures and groups like Canada Proud.
Yet another dangerous sex criminal has gotten a slap on the wrist in Trudeau's Canada, and you won't believe the details.
Canada is being flooded by asylum applications at airports.
Here are the top five lies that Mark Carney has told to Canadians so far.
If that's the case, that is nothing new. That has been the case since Trump's first victory. There's been tons of right-wing quote-unquote newsfluencers that have taken over, and they have become very successful, and they are able to spread a lot of times misinformation. So that's something else that I wish the study would have covered. And there was nothing in the study about how these influencers were discovered. Were people manually looking for them, or were they algorithmically chosen for them? How was, like, quote-unquote political content coded? If they just mention something political, is that automatically a political post? I understand that it's a very hard thing to study, and it's important that we look into it, but it makes it hard for me to trust that this data is representative of the Canadian media ecosystem.
After the break, we'll talk about the OG Canadian newsfluencer. You might recognize his voice. How about this? You are telling me that 23-year-olds, 25-year-olds, 30-year-olds wake up in the morning and turn on CBC News? That's hard for me to be convinced by. But if you told me people doom scroll on their phone and watch newsfluencers on their social media platforms all day, yeah, sure, that makes a lot of sense to me. So even if I have some qualms about the study and whether engagement becomes influence and how tangible this stuff is, I still recognize that this is becoming a serious machine, a media machine, especially in the context of politics. And it makes me think about how it felt when people like Mr. Jesse Brown were doing things that back then seemed like, oh, this is a new media forum and these aren't journalists. They're doing something completely different. Like, to me, Jesse may in fact be, don't put this in his head, one of the original newsfluencer, someone who took media outside of this traditional, inauthentic, mainstream bubble and made it trustworthy, authentic, personal, on the ground. Here's Jesse talking about this very thing with his former boss, OG CBC radio host Michael Enright on the first episode of Canada Land.
You know, as I say, it's somewhat absurd for me to put myself in this position of taking a critical eye towards what journalists are doing.
Oh, we'll get you. Yeah.
Because I really had no intention of being a journalist in the first place.
I know. I think you're proud of that.
Maybe.
Yeah.
You know what? When we met, I was doing satire and pranks, humor column for Saturday Night Magazine.
That's what attracted me to what you were doing.
I felt that there was more truth in what Ali G was doing or what Jon Stewart was doing. They were better reporters, in a sense. There was more honesty in what they were doing than in what I was experiencing watching the news. And that's what I aspired to.
Give me a break.
Why are you shaking your head?
Jesse, it's just too industry for me, man. I want rock and roll, man. He did well for himself.
But look at where we are now. We work at Jesse Brown's company doing this like new medium. And now that medium has been around for a while. And now this new thing has come around, TikTok, social media, newsfluencers, and we're like, look at them. They have no idea. They're not actually journalists. When people don't give a f-, they don't care if they identify as a journalist or not. They just care about, what is this political story? How should I feel about it?
Yeah, and I think a distinction that we haven't made yet is that these people are commenting on news that has been done by news organizations.
By journalists.
Yeah. So I think there's a place for them to be commenting to their followers who hold similar ideological beliefs. Whether that's a good thing or not, I would argue it's not a good thing because you're not subscribing to newsfluencers that you disagree with. I think the point needs to be made that most of them don't break stories. Most of them don't do original reporting. And even the ones that do don't have the capacity to do it all the time.
Your point is that this is